Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is January 9, 2017, or it is Shebat 12, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, More About Yahshua Would I Know. More about Yahshua I would know, more of His grace to others show, more of His saving fullness see, more of His love who died for me. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness see, more of His love who died for me. More about Yahshua let me learn, more of His holy will discern. Spirit of Yah my teacher be, showing the things of Yahshua to me. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness, more of His love who died for me. More about Yahshua in His word, holding communion with my eye, hearing His voice in every line, making His faithful saying mine. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness, more of His love who died for me. More about Yahshua on His throne, riches and glory all His own, more of His kingdom sure increase, more of His coming Prince of Peace. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness see, more of His love who died for me. Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 50. Life is but what we make it. Okay, text for the prayer, taken from Christ's Object Lessons, page 18. And His teaching from the nature, Yahshua was speaking of the thing which His own hands had made and which had qualities and powers that He Himself had imparted. In their original perfection, all created things were an expression of the thought of Yahweh. The earth is now marred and defiled by sin. Yahweh's object lessons are not obliterated. Rightly understood, nature speaks of her creator. In the days of Yahshua, these lessons had been lost sight of. The sinfulness of humanity had cast a pall over the fair face of the creation, and instead of manifesting Yahweh, His works became a barrier that concealed Him. So in Israel, man's teachings had been put in the place of Yahweh. Not only the things of nature, but the sacrificial service and the scriptures themselves, all given to reveal Yahweh, were perverted that they became the means of concealing Him. I wonder if the world is not about the same today as it was in Yahshua's day. The Jews were given a great opportunity to reveal Yahweh unto humanity, but instead they concealed Him. Christians that are quarreling and bickering, bringing doctrines of man into the doctrines of Yahweh, are not revealing Yahweh unto the heathen, but are concealing Him, turning them against Him. Such are not making converts of the Yahshua, but are driving souls away from him. We must pray that we do better, that we do not conceal Yahshua, but reveal him in all our works and through our lives. End of prayer thought. Life is but what we make it. Text of address, July 19, 1947, by the V.T. Hartle. We're in time of greeting once again, Volume 1, number 50. It says, to find out that life is really what we make it, I shall bring to attention seven examples, beginning in the Noah's day and ending in our day. Number one, Noah was commanded to build an ark and to tell the world that a flood was to cover the earth, that only those who would get into the ark would escape alive. 120 years later, the animals were strangely seen to march two and two into the ark. Noah and his family also went in, while the rest of the world laughed and ridiculed. But when the rain began to pour, the situation ceased to be funny. Those outside the ark cried, mourned, pled, but all perished as fools only because they had failed to give heed unto the present truth and failed to feed on the meat in due season. What folly, what disaster. One would think that after the deluge, the world would have had great respect for the religion and for the prophets of Yahweh. But that was not the case, for the Antediluvians did not believe Noah's prediction that there was to be a flood, so they refused to go into the ark. But the flood came and they perished. The post-diluvians did not believe his prediction that there was not to be another flood, so they set about to build the Tower of Babel. But when Yahweh saw the tower skyrocketing, he blasted the top of it and confounded the builders' language. That is, he blotted their own language from their minds and carved into them the languages of today. Thus, he caused the birth of the various races and languages which we today find even in the remotest parts of the earth. It was not Yahweh's purpose that the people should stack themselves in the plains of Shinar, that they should spread out and replenish the earth. And so when they refused to obey his command, he gave them the next best he had for them, and that they had to obey. Man's work independent of and contrary unto Yahweh, you see, is certain to meet with disaster. A house that is built on sand cannot survive a storm, and no man can possibly defeat Yahweh's purpose for men. Do not make a fool of yourselves by trying, for it takes years in the schools of men to learn a language. But in the school of Yahweh, it takes but a moment. He can blot out one language from man's brains and carve in another, and at the same time change the features of his face and the color of his skin. Yes, Yahweh can do all this more quickly than a dentist can pull a tooth. But whether a change be made for better or for worse all depends upon the individual. Example number two. Nebuchadnezzar was given a dream. Being troubled with it, he summoned the wise men of his realm to tell him the interpretation of it. They came, but there was nothing that they could do. At last, Daniel was brought before the king. After hearing the king's story of the dream, Daniel said, Daniel 4:24, 26, 28, This is the interpretation, O King, and this is the decree of the Most High, which is come upon my master, the King, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. And they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall whip thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule, came upon the king of Nebuchadnezzar. For the king heard the interpretation of it, and he understood the decree. Nevertheless, he was not willing to admit that there was one greater than he. Then it came to pass that Daniel 4:29-30, at the end of the 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of the Babylon. The king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom? By the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty. What a statement to make after having heard Yahweh's decree. The king had yet to learn that Yahweh rules the nations, sits up kings, and disposes kings. Let us now hear Elohim's answer unto the king's folly. Daniel 4:31-33. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, unto thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it unto whomsoever he will. Well, that's what we're having here today, and within our government, and around the world. He always sits them up and he sits them down. Okay, we have the sitting down of Obama, and the one that has berated Israel and hates the Jewish people, has done everything in his power to destroy Israel, and to make a hardship on it. Donald Trump has come to the rescue, and Yahweh is sitting Donald Trump up because Yahweh said, anybody that curses Israel, I will curse them. And so, people have not learned that. They don't realize they come to their end when they curse Israel. The same hour was the thing fulfilled when Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like the eagle's feathers, and his nails like the bird's claws. Some, even in to this day, do not realize that Elohim rules, that men are not independent of him, although they are permitted to choose whether or not to serve him. It was not necessary for the Chaldean king to live with the beasts of the field, but as he could not learn this lesson by words in the easy way, he was removed from his palace and put into a corral, there to learn by experience in the hard way. In the end of 7 years, after he had graduated, so to speak, from the Yahweh school of the hard knocks, the king walked back into his palace and said, Daniel 4:34-37, And at the end of the days I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Okay. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according unto his will, and the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth. and none can stay his hand, or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time of my reason return unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness return unto me. And my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of the heaven, all whose works are in the truth, and his ways in the judgment. And those that walk in the pride, he is able to abase. Through pride and disloyalty unto Yahweh, Nebuchadnezzar made life miserable for himself. But at last he did awake. Example number 3. Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom continued until the reign of his grandson, Belshazzar. Belshazzar knew his grandfather's history and his experience with Yahweh, but he failed to profit by it. He made a great feast unto 1,000 of his lords, and commanded that the vessels which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple in Jerusalem be brought to the feast, so that the king himself and his princes, wives, and concubines might drink therefrom. As soon as this revelry took place, there came forth fingers of a man, hand, which rolled over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. Belshazzar was greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Then was Daniel brought before the king, and Daniel emphatically declared, in Daniel 5:18-31, O king, the Most High Yahweh gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom, and majesty, and glory, and honor, and for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and when and whom he would he sit up, and whom he would he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in the pride, he was disposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with the grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High Yahweh ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Yahweh of the heaven. And they have brought the vessels of the house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, and thy concubines have drunk wine in them. And thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the Yahweh, in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was a part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written, and this is the writing that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, Elohim has numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given unto the Medes and the Persians. This is a prophecy that made this fulfillment right here to this very day. The Medes and the Persians are represented by Donald Trump and Mike Pence. Mike Pence represents the Medes. Donald Trump represents the Persians. The two have joined together, and they're fulfilling this prophecy here in Daniel 5:18-31. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with the scarlet, and put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him, that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Okay, what a difference there would have been in the scroll of history if Belshazzar had profited by the priceless lesson which his grandfather had learned. Yes, what a difference it would have made. This is a needful lesson for us all, kings and peasants alike. Example number 4. The Chaldean Empire became a Medo-Persian Empire. Okay. Now, the Chaldean Empire, which was Babylon, became a Medo-Persian Empire. In other words, the Jews come in, the Medo-Persian kings came in and overthrew the Arab kings of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar was an Arab. His son, Daniel calls Belshazzar a son, and he might have been inadvertently his grandson, but nevertheless, they were Arabs. The Chaldeans were Arabs where the Muslims come from today. Okay? What a difference there would have been in the scroll of history if Belshazzar had profited by the priceless lesson which his grandfather had learned. Yes, what a difference it would have made. This is the needful lesson for us all, kings and peasants alike. Example number 4. For the Chaldean Empire became a Medo-Persian Empire, not because the Medes and the Persians were stronger and mightier, but because Yahweh has so decreed. Now those Persians were descended from the Jewish, not the Muslim, not the Arabs. That's another thing we need to learn. Nebuchadnezzar was an Arab. His grandson, or his son, Belshazzar, was an Arab. Okay. Let us see Isaiah 45:1. Thus saith Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of the kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. Cyrus, under whose command the Medo-Persian army marched into Babylon, had not yet been born when the prophet Isaiah wrote of him. But Yahweh remembered his promise, and when Belshazzar felt perfectly secure on the night of the revelry and fatal debauchery, Yahweh opened before Cyrus the two-leaved gates and made possible the capture of the kingdom. There the Medes and the Persians met Daniel and his companion, who called Cyrus' attention unto the scriptures, which not only predicted his victory, but even foretold his name. Having seen and felt the power of Yahweh, Cyrus was moved to decree, Ezra 1:2-11. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Yahweh Elohim of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth. So now Donald Trump is not only taking over this kingdom of Yahweh here in the United States and restoring it back to its constitutional order, but Yahweh has given him the kingdoms of the whole earth. All the kingdoms. All the kingdoms of the earth are going to fall in line and pattern their kingdom after this kingdom that Donald Trump is sitting up. It's going to be a one-world democracy sit back up on the original Constitution of the United States. So you're going to have civil wars in every nation of the world now because of this. But when the civil wars are over, you're going to have eternal peace that's going to reign. Because that's when Yahweh is going to set up his everlasting kingdom with his prophet in charge, Elijah David. Okay. Thus says Cyrus, king of the Persians, Yahweh Elohim of the heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem. Now what did Donald Trump say he's going to do? He said he's going to move the embassy of the United States embassy from Tel Aviv, going to move it to the heart of Jerusalem. And the Arabs are just all up in horror about it all. But that constitutes building Yahweh a house at Jerusalem with the United States name on it. It's going to be the United States Embassy. So Yahweh is going to establish his banner of the United States over there in Jerusalem. I've always wondered why the United States Embassy was in Tel Aviv and not in Jerusalem. Well, now we know. Who is there among you of all his people? His Elohim will be with him. And let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Yahweh Elohim of Israel. He is the Elohim, which is in Jerusalem, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold, and with goods and with beasts, beside the freewill offering for the house of Yahweh that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests, and the Levites, with all them whose spirit Yahweh had raised to go up to build the house of Yahweh, which is in Jerusalem, and all they that were about them strengthened their hands with the vessels of the silver, with the gold, with the goods, and with beasts, and with precious things, besides all that was willingly offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods, even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridat, the treasurer, and numbered them unto Belshazzar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them, 30 charges of gold, 1,000 charges of silver, 29 knives, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a sickest sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. All these did the Shesbazar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. Isn't this amazing? Our new president of the United States, Donald Trump, he lives in a mansion of gold. Everything that he has on his airplane, everything is gold-plated. It is not difficult to see that if the rulers of the Medo-Persian Empire had continued to rule in the same spirit as Cyrus, the kingdom would have stood until this day. For that kingdom, though, gave way unto Grecia, Grecia unto Rome, and Rome unto the nations of today. Plain enough it is to see that the kingdoms of today still stand because Yahweh had proposed it so. They're growing more and more independent of Yahweh will sooner or later bring the end of them too. For looking down the stream of time, down to the kingdoms of today, which are depicted by the feet and toes of the great image, the Spirit of the Truth wrote, "And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part of the iron, for the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron. For as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were a part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, that they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, that they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. In other words, the seed of man is this clay, and the clay is a symbol of Israel. You can go to Jeremiah 18, verse 6, and get that understanding. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, for the great Elohim hath made known unto the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:41-45, rather than merging into the kingdom of Elohim, they will have to be destroyed. Example number 5. Now let us see what benefit the kingdoms and nations reaped from coming in contact with the house of David, the house of Judah, the house of Israel. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, who came in contact with the house of Yahweh, make up the civilized world of today. Look at the nations and peoples, the heathen, in the somewhat isolated places of the earth, who were not so fortunate as to meet the house of Israel as early as the other nations. Still further, look at those who are still more isolated in the remotest parts of the earth, who have had no contact with the congregation, not until just recently. Most of them are but little better than animals, not only in the intelligence, but even in the progress. For the people who were fortunate enough to be the closest to the religion of Yahshua are, you will find, the most intelligent, the most prosperous. England, for example, who translated the Bible and published it and scattered it throughout the world unto all peoples and languages, became the greatest of the nations in its time. Then the United States, but a sister nation to the English Empire, who less than 200 years ago founded this government upon the principles of the Bible and inscribed on its dollar in God we trust, and who also established the American Bible Society, in but a comparatively few years became the greatest of nations, and did as did the Hebrews in their day. On the other hand, those who turned against the religion of the Bible were left desolate. Their blessings became a curse unto them. The hated Jews, for whom there is no spot on earth, are the best example. Germany, who led out in the Reformation, but who turned back from it, has reaped a sorrowful harvest too. But what is true with the nations is just as true with the individuals, homes, families, and communities. If you will take a little time to observe, you will see this law of the blessings and curses and the demonstration everywhere without the exception. For the world was founded upon religion, and you can rest assured that when religion disappears from the earth, the world will disappear with it. Those who fall in love with the truth will find that blessings will reciprocally fall in love with them. Let us read 2 Thessalonians 2:8-12. And then shall the wicked be revealed, whom Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. This is the Son now, Yahshua. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Yahweh shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but have pleasure in unrighteousness. We see that if we do not fall in love with the truth, deception is inevitable. No, none are deceived by coming in contact with error, for we are in contact with it anyway. From the time we are born until the time we die, but everyone who does not love the truth is sure to be deceived, regardless what he may do to avoid it. And those who are satisfied with the truth of yesterday, who are not looking for the fresh truth for today, from the throne of Yahweh, not looking for the meat in due season, such ones will find themselves in as terrible a predicament as did the Jews spewed out. Deuteronomy 30:15-19. See, I have set before thee this day life and good and death and evil. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life that both thou and thy seed may live. Example number 6. If we fail to profit by what Elohim tells us, we shall fail as badly as, if not worse, as any who have failed before us. I think some of you who have had personal contact with Elohim know these things through the experiences of your own. Doubtless you have found that you cannot long prevent explosion while keeping the fire and gunpowder in the same room, that you cannot serve the devil and yet have peace and security. Let me illustrate this by an actual incident. A certain man dreamed that a horse killed him by kicking him. To safeguard his life, he ever after kept his distance from all horses. Nevertheless, one windy day as he was walking down the street, he passed a blacksmith's establishment in front of which was hanging a sign with a horseshoe painted on it. The sign suddenly fell on his head and he died from the impact. We can no more avoid the consequences of sin and of isolation from Yahweh than could the dreamer avoid death by dodging it. We never know what the day will bring forth, and we cannot afford to isolate ourselves from Yahweh even for a moment. Neither can we say definitely that we will or will not do this, that, or the other. Example number 7. Some years ago, while in Europe, I heard that one of my cousins had left for America. I then said to myself, poor cousin, I will never leave home and go to live anywhere as far away as America for any reason. But about that time, I, along with others, was falsely accused of conspiracy. It was in the season when the nights were long, and as we put on the lights in our store one morning before daylight, a mob gathered with guns and stones and stormed the windows. So it was that just a few moments after I took pity on my poor cousin's estrangement from his homeland, I found myself in America in the same house with him. It was a great disappointment at first, no, not lesser than Joseph of old, but what a favor at last. Yahweh blessed the mob. Only Elohim knows the future, and we should place our hopes and ambitions in his mighty hand. Then and then only will we come to the top. And if we are tempted to say we will or will not do this or that, then let us remember Jonah. He said he would not bear a message unto Nineveh, and straightway took a boat for Tarshish. But the boatman threw him overboard, and the great fish picked him up and brought him right back to the place whence he was trying to run away. Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, thought to perpetuate his kingdom or by ordering all his subjects to bow down to his golden image. The three Hebrews, though, defied his purpose and changed the course of history. The men who threw the Hebrews into the fire furnace were themselves burned to death, but not a hair of the Hebrews' heads were singed. All the time they remained inside the fiery furnace. Let us with the psalmist lift up our voices and say, Psalms 8:1-6, O Yahweh, our Elohim, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. who hast set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of the babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hand. Thou hast put all things under his feet. The prophet Malachi was instructed to write for the people that were to live in the time of the end. Let us read in chapter 4, Malachi 4, 1 to 3. For behold, the day cometh, that it shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yeshua the host, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings. And you shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall, and you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua, Yahweh of the host. Actually, this is the Father. Is it not better to be a human being in Yahweh's order, a beautiful, ever-living creature, than to be ashes under the soles of the saints? Why not now respond to his call and make life what it ought to be? Malachi 4, 4 and 6. Remember ye the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgment. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Are you waiting, watching, praying, and hoping that when this antitypical Elijah, the prophet, appears and calls on you, your heart be turned towards your children and their hearts towards you? Or are you crawling under your shell, as it were, for fear that you be deceived if you should meet him? Life, you see, is what you make it. Most people do not know how to make it better, but if you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. To summarize the study, we have learned that we have been put in this world for a purpose, that if we want salvation and blessings, we must cooperate with Yahweh. This we can do by following the example of Yahweh's truth-hungry people. To enable us to do this, he has seen to it that both the glories and calamities of both classes have been noted in his book. If we compare our works with the Noah's works, we will see whether we measure up with him in the obeying present truth. Neither the antediluvians nor the post-diluvians did profit from the Noah's preaching. The former did not believe it possible to flood the earth and perish. The latter did not believe it possible for the earth not to be flooded again. They built the Tower of Babel because they feared another flood, although they were plainly told that there will be no such a flood no more. For Yahweh, though, not only destroyed their work, but also confounded their language, and in exchange gave them all different languages, so that few could understand one another. If we work to fulfill Yahweh's plan for us, we shall never be confused or confounded. Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, at last saw these things as Yahweh sees them, but the hard way, not before Yahweh turned him loose for 7 years to eat grass like the oxen. Later, when he came to himself, he acknowledged Yahweh as the Elohim who rules both heaven and earth. Let us do better than did the king. Then Belshazzar, the king who failed to profit by the experience of Nebuchadnezzar, overnight lost himself, his kingdom, and his all ruler. And his all. Ruler followed ruler, and finally the kingdom passed to the Medo-Persians, then to the Grecians. Okay, now next to the Romans and finally to the nations of today. The nations, you see, belong to Yahweh, and he lets them to be ruled by whomsoever he will. The nations who came nearest unto Elohim and his teachings became great and respectable nations, and those who kept themselves away from him are not much better than animals. It is best to learn what Elohim wants you to do, then do just that. Life truly is just what we make it, no less and no more. Now is your chance. Now you are at the two crossroads. Which will it be for you? The wide or the narrow? Which? Question mark. Well, that ends, let's have a poem now to end this study. This is the gifts of Yahweh. His gifts are greater than my dreams, the gifts of Yahweh to me. As countless as the sunset's golden beams, as boundless as the sea. I ask the part, he gives the whole, himself and all beside. His loving kindness overflows my soul, and rushing as the tide. Within my heart he shall have place to rule and reign supreme. My voice will ever praise him for the grace of which I ne'er could dream. His gifts are greater than my dreams, the gifts of him who set me free, and more abundant daily seems the grace of Yahweh unto me. Okay, let's continue on with the time of reading, volume 1, number 51. July 26, 1947, B.T. Holler, entitled, Is Religion Something Living and Growing, or Is It Something Dead and Waning? Is religion something that grows and expands, or is it something that stands still? Yesterday we heard on the radio a certain minister boast that his denomination has not added or discarded doctrine ever since it was organized. Is this something to brag about, or is it something to bemoan? This is a question under which we now wish to find the answer. If the world does not stand still, if it makes the progress it does, then why should the church stand still? Why should the church not know more of Yahweh and more of the Bible today than she did yesterday? Why should Christianity be proud of not adding Bible doctrines? What a world this would be if everything was not moving ahead as it is. If we were to compare the world's increased knowledge and accomplishment in the last 50 or 100 years, with the church's increased knowledge and accomplishment in the same period of the time, we may see that there is no comparison whatsoever. Look at the progress the world has made, and look at the stupidity which the church is cultivating. Yes, I say cultivating because it seems that rather than bemoaning the fact of not having added or discarded doctrine, and rather than encouraging their people to be on the watch for Elohim's visitation, they are making it their business to keep the laity from coming in contact with the Yahweh's messengers and his progressive truth, with the meat in due season, with Elohim's messages for today. Anything that does not originate in their own conventions, the laity are told to have nothing to do with it. This they do simply because they themselves do not accept the truth Yahweh sends, and because if any of their congregation came in contact with and accepted, they naturally will have to join the truth wherever truth is. So it is their chief business to keep the lady in darkness and in fear that someone is to deceive them if they expose themselves to anything that their ministers do not approve. Such a course may hold back progress for years, but it can never succeed, no, not any more than did the opponents of Galileo make the earth flat by compelling him to recant his position that the earth is round. And no more than Rome succeeded against the Protestant Reformation, or the priests and rabbis against the Christianity. It is therefore high time to realize that the people who must be held in ignorance are something in order to be kept loyal to the church are certainly not worth having, and that's the only way to have them really loyal and firmly established in the truth and saved in the kingdom is to teach the truth and then give them freedom to choose so that they themselves might personally know what is in the truth and what is in the error, to keep them in the darkness of what the deceivers teach, if they be deceivers, is to keep them ignorant of what is in the error. It is to forever close heaven's communication line and to make of the people spiritual invalids and automations. The people must be themselves, must for themselves know what the truth is, and for themselves must decide what to do with it if they are ever to be granted admission into the kingdom. Both those who must be fenced in, or led with a rope, or driven with a club, as it were, into the kingdom, and those who build the fence, pull the rope or hold the club, will find the door closed, and will hear the master say, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Ministers are not called to be taskmasters nor conscience for others. They are called to be teachers of the truth. If the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventists is not making progress with the truth, if she is not periodically adding unquestionable knowledge unto knowledge, then I am sure she has nothing to boast about. She is inactive, her communication line with the heaven broken. Is Elohim forsaken, dead? She can never serve her members with meat in due season from the throne of Yahweh. Let us, for example, take religion as it is in the Bible today. It did not come all at once. Rather, it took something like 4,000 years to accumulate and about 2,000 more years to comprehend as much as the congregation has comprehended by now. If we should compare Abel's knowledge of religion with the Christian's knowledge of it, we should no doubt discover that there is no comparison, that Abel knew comparatively only the very first principles of the Christian faith. If religion, therefore, is not something living, growing, and progressing, then what is it? Abel's religion, 6,000 years ago, has advanced and expanded to meet the people's necessities of the day. This was done only by the inspirations adding to it and itself unfolding. If the church is not commensurately growing and expanding, then how can she be a living church, and how can she keep up with the signs of the times and with the progress in the sanctuary above? Let us read Ephesians 4:11-14. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfection of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Yahshua, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Inspiration makes it plain that Elohim's plan is that the congregation should ever be growing both in knowledge and perfection, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men, and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Since the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventists has not yet attained unto the standard set forth in this verse of the Scripture, it is obvious that she needs to have greater knowledge of the Bible, religion, than she has at the present time. Being far from having reached such unity of the faith, of the knowledge and the perfection, we see the need as clear as crystal. We as Christians need to start growing, otherwise the season of such growth will pass and we shall be left but dwarfs, not having advanced far enough to be eligible for a home in the kingdom. Then shall it come to pass that all such unmatured Christians shall bitterly cry out, "The harvest is past, the summer is ended, we are not saved." Jeremiah 8:20. Bible knowledge, you see, is heaven's way unto salvation and eternity, but the modern minister's way is to keep men ignorant of what is taught outside their own circle, so they may have men under their control, that the truth is growing and that we should keep pace with it. We shall now read Revelation 14:6-10. Okay, this is talking about the three angels' messages for the Adventists now. "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and peoples, saying with a loud voice, Hear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, If any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of the Elohim, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb." Okay, this brings a close of the study. This hour. Contact is at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. We'll close now with a song. "Lead Me to the Rock" by the Elijah Davis song that I've written. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine, I'll forever be. And dedicated to the sons of everyone who came to sin and free. For the life in the soul I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's hard enough. Oh, lead me to the place of the Savior's feet, lead me to the matches in the sky. Man on a mission came to this world, sort of on the slide. Born in a manger and scarcely a stranger could be seen passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry host. For the brightest one of them all is the one that guards the most. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's hard enough. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet, lead me to the badges in the sky. For a star pointed to the newborn king, where he lay in the manger strip. For he's a descendant of the one created by Adam's rib. to the rock that is higher than I. Lead me to the sun that never runs dry. Lead me in the path of the river of life. Lead me to the land of the sky. Lead me to the place of the sacred speed. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky.